It's here and now, and it is April 16th, which means it is the day after tax day. And if you had to pay taxes yesterday, you may be wondering where all the money is going to go and how much you might get back. Well, Washington Post opinion columnist Catherine Rampell recently sparked a heated debate about government social spending when she wrote about who benefits most and who really pays for it. She's with us now from Washington. Catherine, welcome.
Good to be here.
Well, let's go back to your original column on social spending that touched off this debate at the Washington Post. Tell us what you said in the beginning.
I wrote about a lot of research that was done by Robert Moffat at Johns Hopkins University, in which he has looked at how the social safety net has changed over time. He's basically found that in raw dollars, we are in fact spending like four times as much money per capita on social safety net spending today as we were in, you know, let's say 1970. And he considers the social safety net to include everything from Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Earned Income Tax Credit, food stamps, basically any kind of social insurance policy, as well as means-tested benefits that are, you know, basically anti-poverty programs. So he found that, yes, the social safety net has expanded. We are being much more generous as a nation when it comes to this sort of social spending. But he also found that there are winners and losers in that greater expansion of the social safety net, that actually the government is being much more generous to middle-income people and sort of the near poor, people who are slightly above the poverty line, than it is to the very, very destitute.
And that's in part because of programs like Social Security and Medicare, which benefit everybody no matter what you're making.
Right. So it's partly has to do with the fact that those two programs that you mentioned have grown tremendously, partly because of demographics, right? We have a lot more old people today and they're living much longer. And so to the extent that, you know, the government has to spend more money on them, that's going to eat up a larger share of the pie, the social safety net pie. It's also partly driven, to be fair, by some other policies that have deliberately rewarded kind of the working poor as opposed to the jobless. So we've seen over the last couple of decades a huge decline in, you know, what used to be called welfare payments, you know, for like single mothers who couldn't find work. And we've seen a big increase in payments that reward people for working, like the Earned Income Tax Credit.
And you got a lot of response from readers when you wrote that, including one that you started your next column with, which said, "Sorry, spoiled millennial expletive, but seniors have worked and paid for their Social Security and Medicare."
Yes. That was one such irate email, but I got plenty of them. You know, the point of the original column was just to talk about and kind of explain how the social safety net and how Americans go about, you know, supporting and subsidizing other Americans, how it's changed. And I kind of had that one paragraph, maybe it was two, talking about the demographic issues and the fact that Social Security and Medicare represent a bigger share of the whole, you know, welfare state pie today. But that section really touched a nerve. I got a lot of angry emails like the one that you cited saying, you know, you are ungrateful and you're entitled and how this is just, you know, a conspiracy to try to steal the elderly's hard-won benefits that they have already paid for in full, and how dare you try to take it away from us.
To which you responded what?
I don't usually write back to people when they use swear words, but in this case I did. I said, "Thank you for your email. I'm thinking about writing about this in my next column. Would it be okay if I actually quoted, you know, use your name?" And she wrote back saying, "Absolutely not." So I just quoted from the email without attributing it to a specific person's name. And I wrote about how actually this premise that older people have already paid for their benefits in full is completely wrong. That it's very common, but it's completely wrong. Yes, they paid taxes. They paid Social Security taxes. They paid Medicare taxes. But first of all, those taxes went to pay for their parents' retirement and healthcare benefits. It's not like they were sort of held in a special account for each individual worker. You know, you pay in the tax and they get paid out almost immediately to fund existing retirees. And besides that, even if you're just looking at kind of the arithmetic, to see how much did I contribute to the system versus how much am I taking out of the system. It's actually quite a good deal for seniors. Hmm. Generally speaking, for like the retirees who turned 65 in 2010, they're getting out in Social Security payments roughly what they paid in, but they're getting much more in Medicare payments than they paid into the system, which is a function of both Medicare taxes being way too low to ever cover the cost of expected benefits, and also healthcare costs rising dramatically.
And it means that younger people, people in Generation X and millennials, are the ones who are going to be working and paying into the system to pay the benefits that the boomers will be getting as they go into retirement. You are a millennial, and I was looking at the average age of members of Congress. It's 62 right now in the Senate, 57 in the House. This is not a new argument that you're making, but it doesn't seem like it's getting a lot of traction in Washington.
Certainly not. I'm not sure it has so much to do with the age of the politicians themselves, although I'm sure that doesn't help, so much as their constituents. Older people vote. They yeah. vote in much higher numbers than young people. So it's very dangerous to talk about changing the system. And even the proposals that you've seen in Congress that have talked about reforming, like the Medicare system, you know, Paul Ryan got a lot of praise a couple years ago when he put out a proposal for like a block grant Medicare program, or at least capping payments. You know, those won't touch people who are, I think, already over the age of 55.
Right.
So it's very dangerous to talk about ways to reform this system.
Well, as you looked into this issue, is there anything that could be done, do you think, that would be seen as fair by people who are at retirement age, people who are near retirement age, and people who are younger and at working age?
I don't think you're ever going to be able to appease all of those parties. I think what you can do is you can try to find ways to bend the cost curve, as the term goes, with healthcare spending, because that's really what's driving the huge increase in entitlement costs. It's not going to solve the demographic issues you have, where you have a very large cohort of baby boomers who are being supported by a relatively smaller base of working age people.
Right.
That part is very tricky. I don't exactly know how you do it without actually threatening to cut benefits. You know, taxes are going to have to go up if we're planning on keeping the promises that have been made to current and future retirees.
Catherine Rampell, opinion columnist for The Washington Post, and we've got links to both of her articles at our website, hereandnow.org. We'd love to hear from you about this when you go to hereandnow.org, or you can send us a tweet at hereandnow. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.